I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. It's about interesting family stories and the truth behind them. It's available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Seven o'clock hour, after hours, Jay Binkley, Julio Sanchez producing the operation. Well, Julio, I can't believe we actually made it hour without talking about the Chiefs. This has to be a record, but they were off today.
Well, we kind of mentioned, you know, we talked about training camp a little bit, sprinkled a little bit in there, you know.
You been up there yet?
No, and I was going to try and make it up this weekend, but I don't think that's going to happen, Bank. You know what? That's okay. I get plenty of football.
You do.
During the regular season, so.
You do work for the Chiefs.
All right.
You have quite a bit of stuff coming up.
Yep. It'll be a busy season for me.
Are you getting tired of the talking heads? I seem like I do it all the time. Sam, I stopped doing it, but I just keep doing it.
You know what? I actually like it quite a bit because, you know, the great ones take those little tidbits of nonsense and use that as motivation. So any motivation they can give us to continue on this run,
but
I'm
all
for
just,
it.
It's not it's just nonsense, a lot of the media talk. It's the former players, right? And what they're saying. Like the hot takes they're digging into. Like Grant Clark was on with Stephen A. talking about Joe Burrow, right? And the ratings came out for Madden, right? Mahomes is number four, which you know that's coming back up. Fourth highest rating, you know that's coming up, right? Because three of the guys ahead of him, one of them was Lamar Jackson, who Mahomes is 4-1 in his career against, 1-0 in the playoffs against. Josh Allen, who he's 4-0 against in the playoffs. We kind of forget about that. Forget about like how good he's been against these players in the playoffs, or the fact that he was basically playing the season without his number one and number two in a revolving door at left tackle. But anyway, here was Ryan Clark, who's on ESPN, the former Steelers safety, who does Inside the NFL. He's the host of that as well. So he does have some street cred, obviously. This is what he said about Burrow being the best quarterback.
Let's just think about the seasons Joe Burrow has actually finished. In two of those seasons, you go to the AFC Championships, and one of those seasons, you advance. And then you look at last year, and he's the best quarterback in the world, and it's not a conversation. I was talking this offseason to a lot of defensive coaches, and I was talking to a defensive coach, and he talked to me about Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, and Patrick Mahomes. And he says to me, he was like, bro, he's like, those dudes just know how to make something out of nothing. But the reason he thought Joe Burrow was the best was, he said, but Joe Burrow never misses the something. Mm-hmm. There's something to be said for a dude that knows how to put the football where it's supposed to go.
He said it all there. When healthy. Joe Burrow's already been the comeback player of the year twice. You know how that happens, Julio? That happens by missing time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Has he gotten to the Super Bowl? Yes. You know, the other guys haven't. Allen and Jackson haven't been. And Burrow has. So I'll give him credit for that. But you keep hearing these things about the Chiefs. And honestly, it's like I think people forget the success that they've had. I do. And then there's Kurt Warner. Hall of Famer Kurt Warner, who, by the way, will be calling the game for YouTube in Brazil. He'll be the analyst for that, as they've hired him to be the analyst for that. But this is what Kurt Warner said on the Jim Rome show. And this, I hope the rest of the players, the media, whoever accessed the Chiefs, kind of listen to, because this was brilliant.
I'm one of those guys that I'm never going to, you know, say anybody besides the Chiefs until the Chiefs show me that they can't figure out ways to win. I mean, they've done it so many different ways, which is, I think, been the most impressive thing to me, is that sometimes they've done it with offense, sometimes they've done it with defense. Patrick knows how to make the right play in the moment. And, you know, we saw that in the championship game, you know, when Buffalo had the chance to make their plays in the moment, and they didn't. And Patrick and company made their plays in the moment. And so when you've got a team like that, and they're going up against other really good teams, Buffalo and Baltimore, and those teams that we know are going to be there. What separates the Chiefs is that they do. They have the pedigree to say they made the play in the moment. Whoever's needed to make that play, a block kick here or a defensive stop there or Patrick making a great play or somebody that we don't really expect stepping up and making a play offensively to finish a game for him. There's just something about that organization that says they do that differently than those other teams have. Those other teams haven't played their best in the biggest moments. And so right now, I'm still going to say the Chiefs, although I think we all expect at some point Baltimore, Buffalo are going to have to break through with those great quarterbacks that they have. I'm just not ready to say definitively it's going to be this year, because I think the Chiefs are still there and have to be taken down.
It's amazing. Mahomes has gone to the AFC title game every year. And it's not been 1 year, Julio. It's not been 2 years. It's been seven straight. We're working on the better part of a decade. I mean, we'll see where he continues to go. How many will he go to in a decade? Will he go to nine of them, eight of them? We go to all 10 of them? We don't know. We know he's been to seven straight, right? I mean, that's already two games more than half a decade, which he's already done. Seven straight. No other quarterback's ever done that in the history of the league, the first 7 years starting. The other guys aren't doing that. He is. Had Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson gone to seven straight AFC title games or Joe Burrow, you know what? If they want to gloss him, fine. He would deserve that. That quarterback would deserve that he went to seven straight AFC title games. Would 100% deserve it. But they forget that. And they forget the dude is 29. Like, they forget that. And the other stat that I never see put out there, ever, is Mahomes' postseason record. 17 postseason wins. Never out there. Never see that number. People talk about him, and they talk about the downfall. It's over for the Chiefs, but they don't talk about 17 postseason wins. You don't talk about it happening to a team that went 21 freaking years without a playoff win. 21 before Mahomes. Well, actually, Alex Smith broke through on that. But they went 21 years, meaning babies were born and drinking in a bar legally in the time the Chiefs won a playoff game. They forget that he's won 17, and he's not even 30. When Steve Young built his whole Hall of Fame career in his 30s, Kurt Warner played awesome in his 30s. Tom Brady, late 30s and 40s, still built on his career. Aaron Rodgers won MVPs in his late 30s. Drew Brees won MVP in his 30s. Mahomes hasn't even got there yet. And he's got 17 postseason wins. Only Tom Brady has more. Only Brady. That's it. That's the list. He passed Joe Montana last year. And Kelce, and they won't give him any credit. You know, in the postseason, there's three stats that matter for receivers: yards, receptions, and touchdowns, right? For receivers in the postseason. Do you realize Kelce right now is number two in postseason receiving yardage? Only 167 behind Rice. It's closing. 167. He's only two touchdown receptions away from the great Jerry Rice. Rice has 22. Kelce's got 20. Receptions, Kelce's already passed Jerry Rice. He's number one. He's looking up at nobody. So in two of the three categories, he's number two, only behind Jerry Rice. In one of the categories, he's ahead of Jerry Rice. People don't look at those numbers.
So this is why I said earlier why I like this kind of talk. At this point, shouldn't we all be used to it, right? Every
year.
Every year, it's going to be the Chargers, or it's Joe Burrow as the best quarterback, or it's Lamar Jackson, or it's Josh Allen. You know, I like it because they can look shiny. It's the shiny cars. It's the Ferraris. They put up the numbers. They put up the stats. It looks cool. Like, they have that high-octane offense. But guess what happened to Joe Burrow last year?
He didn't even make the playoffs. He watched him on the couch. You know what I'm saying? He had a bad defense. Mahomes played with a bad defense before.
Exactly.
But he won MVP with that.
But he's shown that he can win every... So my point being, I'd much rather win and win ugly than lose, but lose exciting. You're still losing. You're not making the playoffs still. I'd rather have Patrick Mahomes winning whatever way he needs to win, if that means, throwing for no touchdowns and just, managing the game and just showing up when he needs to win the game. I'm perfectly fine with that. Let them talk. Let the Chargers have their offseason. They're going to win the AFC West. Let the Joe Burrow be the MVP. Like, we go to Super Bowls. That's what matters here.
You have parades.
Correct.
So, yeah, he's been to five. He's not even 30.
Oh, he's got again, in the prime of his career.
If
right
we're
now.
Talking about Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson or Joe Burrow, and we're talking these guys have been to five and they've won three and they've gotten the seven straight AFC title games, they're getting a pedestal, man. People are talking about them, and they're not talking about the downfall. They're not lowering their rating in Madden. You know what I mean? Now, 60% of the executives would have Mahomes as the number one quarterback. He's still number one as far as executive is concerned, but it's dropping. And he's not into his prime yet. And he's proven different ways to win, right? He's proven with that high-powered offense and having Tyreek Hill out there and everything else, the speed, the Legion of Zoom, all that. He's done that. He's done it with bad defense. He's done it with the great defenses. He's done it without his number one and two receiver. And a defense that fell back from number two in sacks to number 18 last year in sacks. But he still did it. He's done it against number two, number three, and number four scoring defenses in the NFL 2 years ago when they went 9-6. They fell to 9-6 on Christmas Day when they lost to the Raiders. Then, oh no, the sky's falling. Then all the Chiefs do is go and win the Super Bowl. Again, back-to-back years. And then this year, sky was falling. They won 15 games. Oh, but they won so many close games. Still went to the Super Bowl. Still became the only team in the NFL history to have a chance at a three-peat. Didn't get it done, but we forget that. Short-term memories, man. We forget it.
Well, everyone's just waiting on the downfall. I mean, that's what it is.
But they always make the postseason, and they always win in the postseason. They always win in the postseason. Again, it's 17 playoff wins he's got. They win when they get there. Joe Burrow didn't even go to the playoffs last year. Again, dude's been comeback player of the year twice. That's great, man, but it means you're missing too.
With that defense, I don't know if they're going to make the playoffs this year.
Either, I mean, at least Jermaine Pratt to the Raiders. Trey Hendrickson showed up for his hold in, so he's not fined $50,000 a day. So, yeah, people look at that and say, oh, Trey Hendrickson's back. Kind of. He's not practicing.
Yeah.
And they need him. And they finally got their number one pick, Shamar Stewart signed, who's not even that great of a player. 1.5 sacks last year in A&M. That's the guy that they were counting on. So they have the distinction of being the team in the NFL that signed first-round picks last the last 2 years in the NFL. The Bengals shocking, right? Have been the team signing guys last.
Shocking.
But you got to find a way to win it. You got to find a way to do it differently. By the way, the Chargers and the Lions kicked off still scoreless. About a minute's been played so far in Canton, Ohio, and it's great. It's great. It is great to have the NFL back. We wait so long. We have the draft and the OTAs, and we got camp going on. Then, boom, we got preseason. I get it's the Hall of Fame game, but I don't give a damn. It's still NFL football back, man. We have this, and then we have preseason game for the Chiefs the following weekend.
It's here.
Yeah. So enjoy it this weekend. Do that honey-do list now before things drastically change. Do it now. But the Chiefs have found a way to do it multiple ways. Talk about that next, how much it takes for the Chiefs to do what they're doing. And a player that I'm expecting really to step up and even be better than he was last year, which I think he can. I'll bring that up next.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan.
And welcome back to After Hours. Jay Binkley, Julio Sanchez. Of course, the new NFL rule, don't forget this year. Overtime now is the same as postseason in the regular season, meaning both teams get a chance to have the football. Touchback lines down to 35 instead of the 30. Start to see more returns. So a few things. And the onside kicks, you can now do them whenever.
So that was a stupid rule to begin with.
Trailing teams will be allowed to do it. Now it's just before the fourth quarter, before.
Do you still have to tell the other team you're going to do it?
No. They need to declare their intention for an onside kick.
That's so tough.
But a new change will allow teams trailing to try one before the start of the fourth quarter where they used to have to do it. So now you don't.
Still silly, but better, I guess.
They get to declare it, which is still dumb. But of course you do because it's a different formation, different lineup, how you do it, the onside kick. So, yeah. We'll see what ends up happening. And also the NFL replay assist. It's NFL expanded its replay system to turn over objective calls. If there was clear and obvious evidence that a foul didn't occur, the calls could include face mask penalties, whether it was forcible contact to the head or neck area, horse collar tackles, and tripping. Replay would also be able to overturn a roughing the kicker or running into the kicker penalty if video showed the defender made contact with the ball. The league has been using replay assist in recent years to overturn obvious errors on aspects like whether a pass is caught or not. But anyway, the competition committee said there is no interest in allowing replay assist to call penalties on plays missed by the officials on the field. By the way, other changes, according to NFL.com, referees will no longer use the chains to determine first downs, opting instead for a virtual measuring system. This won't eliminate officials who manually spot the ball and use chains to mark the lane. That's the backup now. The chain gang, they'll still be there. It's the backup. Players can look that and see it visually, but making things faster so the NFL continues to change. By the way, Trey Lance has thrown a touchdown. Did you bet on this one? Did you bet on Trey Lance throwing the first touchdown this game?
I feel like if you're putting bets on this game, you may need to call somebody.
True. No. 100%. 100%. But Trey Lance now 2 of 2 for 14 yards. Trey Lance, one of the biggest mistakes you've ever seen from the Niners, who for some reason, for some reason always escape criticism for that pick. Strange how that
because
works.
Because they were so willing to move off of it, right? They didn't kind of dwell on it.
But they weren't, you know, they took a quarterback, COVID quarterback, and Trey Lance only had one start his last year at North Dakota State because they just did one game kind of to showcase some of their guys, like a Trey Lance, one game they played. But they still took him anyway. Well, of course, he floundered around with the Cowboys as well. Now he's with the Chargers.
They also made up for it with, you know, with a seventh-round phenom. So.
Yeah. Brock last pick in the draft, yeah.
That kind of helps.
Omarion Hampton is actually playing this game. He's got 2 carries for 9 yards. But anyway, NFL football is back. But the Chiefs, man, you know, they just keep finding a way. You know, again, these one-score wins or that block kick against the Broncos to win, something they saw on film and they won. Just like Kurt Warner said, they find different ways to win. And you know, the Patriots did that too, to be honest with you. They won early on with their defense. Had a serviceable quarterback in Tom Brady. And then they were really good with Tom Brady. When he had Randy Moss, they went undefeated, right? But they lost to Eli Manning in the Super Bowl. But they've won all different ways. You won where your strengths are. That's what a head coach does. You figure out what your strengths are. And that's the way you play. The Chiefs and Andy Reid have figured out what their strengths are. And let me tell you this. The Chiefs played last year much differently than they thought they were going to have to. When you think you have Hollywood Brown and Rashee Rice, then all of a sudden, game four, you lose Rashee Rice, who was off to a great start for the season. You've lost Hollywood Brown already in the preseason. End of the year, you got 9 catches for you. But you're playing differently than what you thought. You have to make changes. You have to make changes in how you go. They didn't throw the ball down the field. They didn't have the time to throw the ball down the field. The left tackle situation. And the Chiefs were second to last in the NFL in 25 yards or more passes. Only the Cards and the Dolphins were worse. The Chiefs had 6 of them, sitting at 31 as far as 25-plus air yards down the field. They had to figure out different ways to do things. But Fesco, I go on with Fesco and Dusty every Wednesday. We talk football, college football or pro football, and obviously starting amping a lot more up on college football coming up soon. But, you know, I was talking about Xavier Worthy with him a little bit. I know he had the concussion problem and protocol and all that. It's fine. But, man, is this guy not showing his toughness? I mean, think about...
He did last year.
Think about when he came in for this team. It was going to be the perfect storm. You know, first-round picks always have a lot of pressure, but Hollywood Brown was here. Again, same skill set. Rashee Rice was already here. Those guys get hurt, and guess what? It's step up first-round pick. Step up Xavier Worthy. He had problems on the sideline there, being inbounds or out of bounds. You know, Mahomes is throwing, you know, that placement, time and space placement. But he made the adjustments. He got better and better as this year progressed. 59 catches on the year, but he led this team in yards and receptions in the postseason. He just kept getting better and better. And this year, he's even more physical, proving he's more than just the 4-2-1-40 guy, as he did at Texas, because he did everything for the Longhorns.
He's got to keep making improvements, but
he is.
He definitely made big strides last season.
For his size, weight, I'm talking about his weight, really not his height. He's 5'11", but he's 165.
He was way more durable than any of us thought he would be.
No,
he is. That was the knock.
But he was that way at Texas, though. Yeah. I mean, he played tough. He played tough. He was an academic All Big 12 guy. Was, you know, he's gotten tougher and tougher as we go. But his progress last year, again, I think it was dumb of Buffalo to pass on him. Dumb of Buffalo to trade the Chiefs. Again. And they get Keon Coleman. I'd really have Xavier. I think Keon Coleman's going to be decent, but Xavier Worthy's
He'll
better.
Be serviceable, but yeah, I think Xavier Worthy's proven already he's got a higher ceiling.
Just like when they jumped up to get Trent McDuffie and the Bills were satisfied with Kyrie Elam. Even though they wanted McDuffie, they did, but the Chiefs jumped them. And then, of course, Bills and Mahomes. We know how that one went. We know how that went down. But again, these rivals continue to build up the Chiefs. It's like the Ravens have in the past, too. But yeah, Xavier Worthy,
who
man.
Was it again that the Bills ended up drafting? The cornerback that I don't even know Tredavious? Was in the league? No, it wasn't. It wasn't Tredavious.
At 27, they did.
It was instead of Trent because they.
Oh, Kyrie Elam.
Kyrie Elam. That's a. I don't even know if he's in the league anymore.
He is. He is. Yeah, Kyrie Elam's still around. He's not with the Bills. He's he moved to the. I think it was the Dallas Cowboys.
Good for him.
But we'll see what Kyrie does. But again, we'll talk about the left tackle positions. We'll talk about the offensive line with Jalen Moore in here now and how Justin Simmons is playing like a man child. Josh Simmons is, he's been good. He's been real good. Very good. But again, wait and see. Don't put pressure on the guy. We'll see. Hadn't seen real game action. Yeah, matter of fact, he's got as many NFL starts as you and I do. But things look good for the Chiefs to have a left tackle, man. Knock on wood. And then Jalen Moore, you figure out where he's going to go. Is he battling Juwan Taylor, right tackle? They moved him in the left guard a little bit behind Kingsley. It's a good problem to have, and he's very versatile. Again, he went to Western Michigan as a tight end. That's how he was recruited. Ended up at left tackle, but it shows his versatility, how he can do pretty much everything. And I think Jalen Moore is going to be a nice fit for the Chiefs. Whether he's a swing tackle, backup guard, whether he steps in at tackle left or right for injuries going forward, but I think the Chiefs are better. We'll talk about that later on. But coming up next, though, J.J. Piccolo, Royals general manager, had an awesome day. The Royals had an awesome day with the moves they made, but he held kind of a Zoom presser there. Vern was on it. Vern sent it in. But his moves that he made for the Kansas City Royals today, we'll bring you those next.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to After Hours. Jay Binkley, Julio Sanchez producing the operation. Cameron Dicker doinked the field goal. It would have been 10-0 Chargers, but it's still 7-0. Trey Lance, a touchdown pass in this.
He's moving the ball, you know?
Yeah, see if he's got his 4-6, 48 yards, touchdown. Of course, he's backing up Herbert. Kyle Allen starting for the Lions, the backup of Jared Goff. But it's football. Football has returned. Big weekend, the Hall of Fame weekend. It's good stuff. You can see some Jared Allen go in, the guy that was drafted as a backup snapper. But good things in Kansas City. Chiefs are off today. They practice again tomorrow. And, of course, all weekend, last weekend, to go up there and watch them before preseason the following week. So you get to go do that. Royals off day today. They play Toronto for three starting on Friday. Of course, they were extremely busy making moves. Three arms coming to the Royals plus Yaz in the outfield. But, again, the barometer was kind of set when they gave Lugo that extension. Instead of waving the white flag and trading him off. Anyway, the Royals GM, J.J. Piccolo, which I think had a hell of a day. I mean, this thing's getting A grades all across the board to get major league ready guys. Got to keep this pitching staff going. It is the second best pitching staff of all of Major League Baseball, according to ERA. And it's elite pitching staff. They've been good, but I get it. You take injuries. Chris Bubich down for the year. That was your all-star. Lorenzen's already hurt. We'll see what the Royals have. J.J. Piccolo talked about it today just a little bit ago. Vern was on there in the presser for J.J. Piccolo, but he explains kind of who and what they got just a few minutes ago.
Wanted to answer whatever questions you might have after kind of a busy day for us, but we think an exciting day, and set out in the beginning of the trade deadline was very different a couple weeks ago. And then with some injuries we had, obviously things changed, needs changed. But we started today with the clear objective that we were going to try to address starting pitching, and left last night having a pretty good idea that we might be able to execute a couple moves. And the two moves that we did execute were the two moves that we felt the best about with San Diego and with Pittsburgh. So it was nice to see that come together, the way our room was prepared, the way they did their work. And then once we were able to get, you know, our hands on Falter, then it was a matter of trying to secure a bat somehow, which came around obviously extremely late since the tweet just went out. So all in all, we're pretty happy when you go back to picking up Randall last week and Frazier a couple weeks ago. We feel like we've added to our offense with some guys with great experience. And then we were able to add to our pitching at a time of year where it's fragile. It's really fragile, as we've learned here recently. And I think what we've done is going to allow us to work through the year with the pitchers we have, the starting pitchers that we have, in an efficient way, in a way that's going to be healthy for all of them. And we're just excited that we were able to gain these guys who, when you add it up, I believe it's 14 years of control on the starting pitcher side of things with Berger, Kolek, and Falter. So all in all, pretty good day, and happy to answer whatever you might have.
Hey, JJ, can you go a little bit deeper into the San Diego trade? And clearly, like, catching was a weakness of theirs, and they were looking to add that. How did that come about, and how important it was for you guys to get a lot? There's quite a bit of upside there with those two players, too.
Yeah, well, the first thing I want to say, I think anybody that's been around us and around Freddie, you know how infectious his personality is, and he is a not only a fan favorite, but he's a clubhouse favorite. And that was, I will say, that's an emotional thing, because you've had Freddie since he was 20 years old. You watched him grind his way through the minor leagues. Nobody can outwork that guy. He was a perfect partner for Salvador Perez. Salvi mentored him in a way that he's ready to take over as a starting catcher somewhere. And he had a lot of value in the game. And that this isn't new. The interest in Freddie is not new. That has been going on for the last year. I would say last trade deadline, this past offseason. Had we not traded Freddie today, we would have had a chance to trade him in the wintertime if we chose to do so. But I will say, on a personal note, I really enjoyed Freddie. I think we all did. But I am very happy for him that he's getting an opportunity to play and maybe play a larger role on a good team. And for San Diego, he was a target for them. They've always had an affection for Freddie. So we knew we had a starting piece. And of course, like we do with everything, you try to dance around it and go to other players. But they clearly had a need in the catching department that we could fill for them. The asking price for Freddie was steep. And a lot of teams walked away from anything that we would ask for Freddie, but San Diego didn't. It's two young starting pitchers. Both have tremendous futures ahead of them. I don't want to speak for San Diego, but, you know, you get the vibe from them. That's why it took until today to get that done. You get the vibe from them that this was a difficult trade for both sides, which is what a good baseball trade should be. You're giving up players that you value, players that you trust. And they gave up two that I know they valued and trusted, and we gave up one that we really valued and trusted as well. So it was, I think I could say last night going to bed, I felt like it was better than 50-50 through some late conversations with San Diego. I felt like it might be here in the day, sometime during the day, preferred for it to be earlier in the day so we could move on to other things, because it was two starting pitchers. I mean, San Diego was pretty busy today, so they had a lot going. So they had to have a lot of things fall in place before this happened. So it did, and we were able to execute the deal. So happy to get both players. I mean, it's going to be good for us. And as tough as that call is to Freddie, you know, it's also, I think, welcoming for him to hear how valued he was. And to know that you got two starting pitchers, if you just took the emotions out of it, you know, the passion, the excitement you have for the players, and just say, can you get two starting pitchers for a catcher who right now isn't our number one catcher? You would do that trade over and over again. Just take the personal ties out of it. You would do it over and over again. So we think it made sense for both teams, and we want Freddie to do well for San Diego. And like I told him, let's play each other in the World Series, and that could be even better.
What can you share about where Bergit and Kolek will go in the immediate future?
So we still have a lot to iron out here. Days that they last pitched on is going to play a factor. Both Falter and Bergert is the proper way to say it, pitched on Tuesday, as did Seth Lugo. Kolek is currently on option. He pitched last Sunday. So we still have some things that we have to figure out before I can really commit to that. I know Q is on a flight right now. He has all the information. Scott Sharp's with him, with Brian, and they'll be working on that on the plane tonight, and we can answer that better tomorrow.
And just real quick, does Kolek have to stay in AAA the minimum 15 days?
He does not. Because okay. He was on option, he does not have to stay 15 days. And that was something that we needed to know beforehand, because we didn't know what else was going to happen. With Falter coming later, then it would have been pretty obvious that Kolek would be recalled. And we are permitted to call him after he's assigned to another club since he was on option.
Hey, JJ, was Falter someone that you kind of looked at when you were negotiating the Adam Frazier trade earlier this month? And if so, how much did his last two starts kind of help push that towards the finish line?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that we were talking specifically about Falter at that time, because it was 2 weeks before the trade deadline. It was more about, we may be looking for pitching, we're not sure. At the time, it was more of what we did last year, if we could secure another arm just to protect the starters. That was where our mindset was at the time. And then obviously Chris went down, and that changed how we had to go about it. So I could tell you that we knew Falter would be a target at the time, but he wasn't spoken about specifically when we talked about Frazier. That came about here in the last 3-4 days. Once things happened with Chris, I think that was Saturday. I've lost track of days, but I think it was Saturday, but when that happened is when it became a little bit more of a discussion with specific names.
Yeah, and just with his last couple of starts, what does he bring to the table, and what really excites you about adding him to your organization?
Yeah, he's a tough competitor. I will tell you that. He's got a sound delivery. He throws strikes. We feel like there are things that we will be able to do with him that may help him continue to develop. He's got 3 years of control, which is outstanding for us. Brian Sweeney was his pitching coach in the minor leagues with Philadelphia. So we had a personal tie there. Adam Frazier was able to give me a lot of information about him and his competitiveness and how he would fit in this clubhouse, which obviously came back with very good reviews. But I think we have a young pitcher starting to come into his own, with a couple of years of control. And that's exciting to us. As I've shared with all three of these guys on the phone, they'll soon find out with what Seth Lugo and Michael Wacha and Chris Bubich and Cole Reagans found out, and now Noah Cameron, that our pitching coaches do a really good job in developing pitchers. So I think it should be an exciting thing for him. Or all three of them to work with the staff that we have.
JJ, is the plan to go with Salvi and Luke at catcher, or it was possibly?
Yes. As of right now, that's what we're going to do. I mean, we very intentionally, kept Luke with us as much as we could. When we ran him through waivers earlier in the year, we were a little uneasy that he would get claimed, but his veteran presence, game calling skills, knowing our pitchers, being the type of guy that he is in our clubhouse that carries a lot of value. The pitchers enjoy pitching to him. And, that's what he's done his entire career. When guys like Luke, I mean, I think about the game Sunday. I don't know how long it's been since he's truly played. He catches a tremendous game and he gets a big hit. That's what veterans do. And that's where, in the role that he is in with this club right now, it's going to be really important that we maintain that.
And Yastrzemski said that deal came together late. Just two-parter. What do you like about his game, and when did those talks begin?
Yeah, those talks in Yastrzemski were late. You get to that last hour and you start going through what's still available. It was a late trade. I want to say it was about a minute and a half left before the deadline ended. There were some components to it that we had to work out. But if you look at what he does, he handles right-handed pitching extremely well. He's going to complement Randall extremely well. So between the two of them, you have a very capable I don't want to call it a true platoon, but you have what appears to be a true platoon. And I don't think it'll be exclusive to just righties and lefties. One will play, one won't play. But it does fit very nicely, and it rounds out our lineup and our bench and things we like to do from a strategical standpoint extremely well.
Hey, JJ, I mean, you made it pretty clear over the past couple of weeks you guys would not be selling, but what were the conversations like over the last week, few days, whatever it might be, that you determined that, you know, this team was worth adding on to?
Well, for one, we're playing better right now. You know, I like the way we've played. We're starting to score some runs. I know we've had some games in between games we've scored runs where we don't, but there are signs that the offense is coming around. I think with the additions of Frazier and Grichik, I think that has been very helpful. But the strength of the club is pitching. And, you know, we just got Hunter Harvey back, and he's healthy. He's pitched three times in 6 days. That's a great sign for us. If we can get back to that seventh, eighth, ninth inning with those three and get quality starts out of Lugo, Waka, Cameron, and now two of these three that we just acquired, our bullpen's going to be in good shape. And, you know, we believe in our team. We have. They haven't given us reason to ever say it's time to sell. If for no other reason, we're still a fairly young team with a young core together. And trying to build that culture of winning is extremely important to us. If we were 15, 20 games under 500, that's a different story. And we could have done a lot of different things because we have pitchers that people value. We have position players of value. I'm just really glad, and I know the team is, that we're not in that position where we felt like we had to. So I think we have a little bit more of a complete team. I think we spoke a week or two ago about how our bench and how the rosters evolved. And right now we didn't have the balance that we felt like we needed, from a strategic standpoint, matching up late in the game. Now I feel like we have that balance, and Q's going to have options to make moves late in the game, and we become a tougher team to defend.
And then you mentioned, I think with the words with Freddie, you say, if you take the emotions out of it, could you describe, you know, when you've been with a player for a decade, when you do have the fondness that you do have for Freddie, the difficulty of taking the emotions out of that conversation?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it goes through your mind, you know, what's that call going to be like? And in this case, how's the team going to react because he's so well-liked? But I think we've got enough veterans in our clubhouse that they understand how the game works. You know, when it comes down to it, I hate to say it like this, but it's a business, and we have opportunity to improve our clubs. We have to improve our team, and that's what this is. And as much as we like Freddie, and there's plenty of others we like, you know, the best thing for this team moving forward was to take advantage of a valued catcher and turn him into a couple starting pitchers. It would have been easy if we didn't like him. That's piece of cake. But in this case, we liked him. But when it gets to just business, you know, business is business. And I had a conversation right after I spoke to Freddie. I had a conversation with Sal, because you all know how tight they are. And Sal said, we talked about it yesterday. And he told Freddie, just go play. You can't control things, you know. And I, as far as I know, Freddie's name wasn't in any trade rumors. But when you have guys like Salvi, you have guys like Lugo, and Waka, and others that have seen this happen time and time again throughout their careers, they know it's always a possibility. But, you know, the call to Freddie was tough and the call to Salvi was tough. But like I told Salvi, you mentored him in a way that he's ready to take over as a starting catcher for somebody. And that's something he should be proud of.
Thanks, JJ. Just one quick thing. I just wondered how Cole Reagans factors in to the potential rotation moving forward, and when you might expect he can factor in.
You know, Q and I were laughing about this couple days ago. I'm sure you all remember when you were asking me what we were going to do when everybody gets back with Wright and Marsh. Well, that never happens. So that'll be a good problem when it gets there. And I hope it's a good problem to have. The nice thing in what you have in Burgert and Kolick is they are young pitchers with options. You know,
so there you go. There's JJ basically talking about all the players he has. We could still see Cole Reagans. That only makes this pitching staff better. And don't forget about Kyle Wright. He should be pretty close to getting back up here as well, who led Major League Baseball in wins a couple years ago, was recuperating all last year, part of the postseason run for the Royals, you name it. We'll finish up talking about them, the Royals, when we come back.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan.
Welcome back, 96.5 The Fan. After Hours, Jay Binkley, Julio Sanchez producing the operation. JJ Piccolo, what are you thinking your whole way in here, man? You heard Carrington do all his interviews from San Diego to Pittsburgh, back to San Francisco. Carrington and Rob all over. The Royals kept making moves. They kept getting interviews. It's a beautiful thing.
It was. Made Rob work for his money today, huh? Busy day for him.
But he did.
They covered it pretty good, though. I mean, there was a lot happening this afternoon, I got to say. A lot.
Were you expecting this?
I don't think anybody was. I mean, I think going into it a few weeks out, I think we thought they'd be more sellers than buyers. I think, like you said, once
that Lugo deal,
once
the
done, Lugo extension hit,
all right, they mean business. They're not doing this just for fun.
Yeah, but I still don't think many people thought they'd make this many moves. And not only that, but I mean, somewhat hinting towards maybe shoring up the bullpen or the rotation. But man, I mean, for what they got, I mean, no, I did not expect them to get what they got back for what they gave up, especially.
Well, it was an extremely light day in Major League Baseball today. Just a handful, just a couple games.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see what MLB Network says about all these moves tomorrow. And where the Royals sit, I mean, if you're a Twins fan, like, how are you feeling right now? Starter after starter, player after player. They'll be selling that team or whatever. It's pretty evident, but they just traded everybody off, man. If you were a Twins season ticket holder, because it's not like the Royals in Cleveland just kind of completely running away from things. They've been kind of lingering around like a fart for all season. Minnesota has, you know what I'm saying? But now, you know, look at that. The Cleveland sits a half game ahead of the Royals in the wild card standings, but yet their all-star closer plus another starting pitcher.
It's like,
in that MLB probe for gambling, they're gone for the year. Well, gone at least till September.
Pretty much for the year. It's almost like being fired, but saying we're going to keep you on for another month or two. I mean, at that point, why? If I know I'm leaving, why am I going to work? Well, what incentive do I have to work?
But it's on, man. It's on, man. Look at the Royals.
The Royals, it is.
Well, Royals in Toronto for three. Then at Boston for three. It's going to be tough. But then at Minnesota for three, right? Minnesota's trading everybody off. See how that goes. Then you come home. You have Washington for three, Chicago for three. They've got Chicago like six more times this month. And I know Chicago's been playing better and all that, but they're still 30 games under 500. Yeah, they're still America's booty call.
They got to take advantage. That's something they haven't been able to do the first half of the season.
But I tell you what, Monday, August 18th, four games, Texas. They sit in front of you. And then it's for Seattle. It's Tuesday, September 16th, 17th, and 18th at the K, Seattle for three. Again, you look at Texas, look at Seattle. Those series are going to be so important because they sit right ahead of the Royals to the promised land to where they want to be. And by that time, you want them to be in position where they can jump ahead of them. I'll tell you what, though, with the Chiefs in camp, first preseason game next weekend, I think the Royals, man, they're garnering your attention, too. You're looking at both your left eye and your right eye, watching the Royals, watching the Chiefs. I mean, this is good times. You don't have to completely flip the page to the Chiefs. Like, I know we want to when training camp started, but the Royals doing this, reel you right back in, man. It's good to be in Kansas City right now. It's good to be Seth Lugo and not having to leave. That dude and his wife were happy to be staying in Kansas City, man.
We got paid.
They love it. They love it here. Love the fans here. Love the people here. Love the city. I mean, it was a big kind of Kansas City move as well. They love being here, man, because they're welcome.
Well, he did sign somewhat of a team-friendly deal.
Vern says he saved the Royals $14 million going forward. I get it. I mean, it is cheaper living here than some other places, but, I mean, there's a lot, too, just raising your kids, staying here in Kansas City, and just going forward, right? The city's got a lot to offer, and guys like Seth Lugo and enjoyed that. He was glad to stay in Kansas City. And then you look at today, the trade deadline, J.J. Piccolo extremely happy, and he should be because it was a hell of a day for J.J. Piccolo and the Kansas City Royals. John Sherman, the owner of the Kansas City Royals, wanting to spend on this team and reeling the fans in. But not just the fans, sending a message to that locker room as well. Sending a message to that locker room that, hey, there's no white flags with this team. It's go time, man. if that doesn't send a message to what your boss thinks about you as a player and your faith, his faith in you, I don't know what else would. There wasn't a bunch of guys getting off that plane, but Freddie, and I don't know if you even got on it. Because they held that plane until 5:30 at the tarmac.
They did. I mean,
as long as you don't see luggage and stuff moving off that plane, it's good moves. Good moves. Agreed. And granted, the new players, I don't know if you're going to see them. I don't know if they're going to make their way up to Toronto or not. Who knows what's going to happen. But I do expect them in Boston once they get there. So we'll see what happens. Coming up next, though, back to the Kansas City Chiefs and really kind of what everybody's thinking and kind of the mindset of the Chiefs going forward now. Because I love their attitude, and I love the attitude of this offensive line. They're a physical group. We'll discuss that next.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters. Love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.